Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and we'll be talking mostly about the Moscow protests and the hardline police response. My guest today is my colleague Mike Eckel, RFERL senior correspondent, now based here in Prague after several years in Washington, D.C. Mike did some groundbreaking reporting there on the mysterious death of Mikhail Lessin and a number of other stories. Mike, welcome to Prague and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. Well, today we're going to talk about the protests in Moscow and the response by President Vladimir Putin's government and the police. Most people in Russia probably in Moscow, don't think much about the Moscow City Duma, or they didn't think about it much in the past. But decisions by election officials who have barred several independent candidates from the ballot in September elections, some of them from the opposition, have led to some of the biggest protests since Putin returned to the presidency in 2012. There were more than 20,000 protesters the previous weekend. Hard to say how many this past Saturday because they were kept away from the mayor's office, so it was pretty diffuse. But the number detained, over 1,300, almost 1,400, was certainly a record for recent years. And the use of force by police against peaceful protesters also seemed unusually harsh. Mike, do you think the crackdown or clampdown was essentially a random outcome or was very much planned and organized? And if it was planned, any idea of what the Kremlin's motives might have been?
So I think it's important to remember that nothing happens, very little happens by chance in Russia, particularly where these kind of events occur. So, no, I don't think this was a random outcome at all. And even before the Saturday protests, there was already messaging from particularly the Moscow mayor's office and other authorities that this protest would be met with potentially exceptional measures. And indeed, that's what we ended up seeing on Saturday. We saw a police response that was arguably more violent. It was definitely more aggressive. It was more wanton. And I think that points to a significant shift in how the Kremlin and law enforcement authorities are going to be addressing these protests and political demonstrations in the future. You know, what the motives from the Kremlin are, I mean, the messaging is clearly out there. The Kremlin's saying, okay, this is how we're going to respond here on out. Now, that's not to say that future responses will be equally violent, but the Kremlin has clearly sent a message, first and foremost, to the liberal intelligentsia, many of whom are centered in Moscow. Moscow is far more liberal than the rest of the country, and that's where a lot of the political opposition finds the room to push back in whatever form against Kremlin policies. I think there are a couple of things to keep in mind with Saturday's protests. One is that there have been a series of protests over the past 6-9 months in various parts around the country. We saw the protests in Yekaterinburg over the proposed church project built in the center of that Ural Mountain city. It was met with a wide outburst of public dissent, and the public authorities ultimately backed down after several days. There was no sort of violent police crackdown in that case. We've also seen other protests in places like Arkhangelsk, where people have been outraged about a plan to bring in garbage and municipal waste from Moscow. They're worried about despoiling the local environment there. So there have been a series of protests that have mainly concerned sort of bread and butter issues, local issues. They haven't been issues of sort of larger political import. The protests that happened on Saturday were clearly a question of who gets to participate in the election, who gets to participate in this case in the Moscow City Duma election. And the Kremlin response is clearly we decide who gets to protest. We decide who gets to participate, and we're going to set the parameters for how any sort of political protest will happen in response to our decision making. So, you know, long story short, the messaging is out there. The Kremlin is saying, "Hey, we're going to be a lot harsher than we have been in the past." And now the next question is how the opposition is going to respond to the police crackdown for future events.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, one thing you mentioned, these other local protests around the country about various issues, and, you know, this one being about a political issue, about elections. And, you know, I've seen some people saying an interesting point that for years, the Kremlin, the government has essentially been telling the opposition or you know, Kremlin opponents, look, you know, you can't be on the street. You need to be being constructive and you need to, you know, do what you think you can through elections, take part, you know, in the elections. But here, of course, and in cases in the past, you know, the authorities are keeping these people out of the elections, essentially pushing them into the street and then detaining them, cracking down. So, you know, it's sort of a matter of, you know, it's just, you know, where can you go from there?
I think that's an important point that we didn't mention earlier on, is that the lead up to this election saw some really unusual activity as well. Opposition candidates were doing their utmost to get on the ballot, and they were being kept off the ballot by election authorities with all sorts of weird Byzantine, sort of almost absurd techniques, like clone, like candidates' signatures being falsified on registration documents, and people being blocked from physically entering election headquarters. So even in the run-up to these protests, we were already seeing some novel techniques by local authorities to minimize the candidacies and the participation of opposition candidates in the upcoming elections. Now we have Saturday's protests and the violent police crackdown. And I think your point is interesting, whether the authorities have said, okay, we're going to keep you off the ballot, so now move your protest to the street. Now participation has moved to the street and we've seen a police crackdown. So it's hard to say what will come next from all this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk a little bit later about next weekend. But another incident that's related, in which there's a question of whether we're looking at a planned action or a random occurrence, is Alexei Navalny's illness. He's serving a 30-day jail term that supporters say was designed to keep him out of this past Saturday's protest. And he's said to be having symptoms such as a rash and swelling, quite serious symptoms that authorities say apparently are the result of a severe allergic reaction. To what, it's unclear. One aide of Navalny who said who spent a month in the same cell, actually last month in June, says he doesn't think it's foul play. He also had similar symptoms. So he's talking about, well, this is just the bad conditions in Russian jails. But a doctor for Navalny says she cannot rule out essentially a deliberate poisoning with some toxic substance. Mike, what do you think about this?
It wouldn't be the first time that authorities and, I mean, either law enforcement authorities, intelligence agencies, security agencies have used suspicious, weird, mysterious substances to sideline Kremlin opponents. Now, you know, all caveats apply here. It could be something very mundane. It's too early to say exactly what Navalny was afflicted with. However, as close watchers of Russia know, that there has been a pattern in the past where people have been either poisoned or hit with strange toxic substances. Of course, Navalny himself was briefly sidelined not long ago when some random fellow walked up to him and threw green antiseptic solution in his face and nearly blinded him in one eye. So again, I think we have to wait before coming to conclusions saying indeed he was poisoned with some, you know, substance. But it wouldn't be out of the realm of plausibility that that's what happened here. And if it was, if it did turn out that he was poisoned, then that's another signal from the security agency, law enforcement, that, you know, we're willing to use all sorts of techniques in order to sideline, minimize, silence people who are charismatic and outspoken. And again, Navalny has long been seen as one of the most effective anti-Kremlin crusaders for many, many years, and that's why the Kremlin has reacted so so decidedly against him over the years to minimize him and keep him from building a national following.
Right, exactly. And in Moscow, I guess in 2013, in the election against the current mayor, Sobyanin, he received, I believe it was almost 30% of the vote. And that was at a time when they didn't then imprison him because I think, you know, most people say they were afraid of creating a martyr. But, you know, he's been in and out of jail a bunch of times since then. And I think, you know, as you say, speculation, you know, we can't really speculate. It's too early to say what happened. But if it was poisoning, you know, a deliberate, it would sort of fit in with the idea of the security forces or the government sort of taking another step. It's like, well, you've been in jail, you know, many times, but this time it's different. You're actually, you know, so kind of the idea of frightening people even more than might have been before. So, you know, against this backdrop, I guess one question is, you know, activists are planning to hold a new protest this coming Saturday. I'm not sure of the details, but I believe it is planned. Obviously, you'll have Navalny still in jail, and most of the people who were detained on Saturday were released. But, you know, it seems like it's sort of a different field of play. So, you know, what do you think? Do you think it has the potential to be a large protest or are people being scared away?
I think, well, the next 24 to 48 hours will tell us exactly how the chessboard will play out. You know, if the opposition groups and those people who have been released find some way to generate a critical mass of I mean, the sympathy is already there, but a critical mass of momentum to say, okay, you know, full speed ahead, we're taking the streets again on Saturday. Then we'll have to then wait and see what sort of messaging we get from the Moscow mayor's office or the Kremlin itself about how these protests will potentially go forward. I think there's another larger point that's worth making, and we spoke earlier about the smaller protests that we've seen in several places around the country. The much larger context to all this is what's happening in the coming years with regards to Putin and his succession. Now, again, it's easy to say this is just a Moscow City Council, Moscow City Duma election we're talking about, but everything has significance and everything has a symbolic substance in Russia. And what's playing out here is in many ways sort of a tactical skirmish in terms of how we will see politics evolve over the next several years. Now, again, it's 2019. Putin, his next term is up in 2024. But there's discussions already going on about what comes next. Will Putin stay on? Will he be succeeded by someone? Will he take on another form? How will that all transpire? And it's an existential question for the Kremlin and for the Putin regime. And so while you don't want to imbue a local protest and a local election with too much sort of gravity and larger significance, it's worth watching what happens in response to Saturday and what happens in response to this upcoming protest to see how the Kremlin, to get insights into how the Kremlin is thinking, how the political process will play out in the coming years. Will there be a harsher crackdown? Will the political opposition be completely wiped out? Will the Kremlin come up with some new techniques for marginalizing, sidelining political opponents? Will it come up with a new way of messaging? Messaging is all important for the Kremlin. How this is perceived through the prism of state media and state TV. You know, as with everything, it's worth paying very close attention to the next 24 to 48 hours, how the opposition and how the law enforcement will signal how the Saturday process will go forward. And then, of course, looking forward into the future about signals for what will happen with Putin's succession.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is completely reasonable to look pretty far into the future on this. Remember, in terms of signaling and what they're thinking in the Kremlin. Remember, a few weeks ago there was talk of a thaw after the release of Ivan Golunov, a journalist. And this seems like almost a completely different landscape now. And what I guess Putin himself has not, I don't think he's commented on this Moscow situation. And on Saturday, I'm not sure if it was exactly the same time, but he went down in the Baltic Sea in a submersible, a little submarine, to I think put up a plaque to World War II veterans. So that was kind of a symbolic move there. And in terms of he's at least so far staying, people often say above, but in this case maybe below, or he's underwater at the time.
I wouldn't be surprised if we hear something from him or his spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, in the coming day or so that gives us some indication of how the Kremlin is viewing this.
Yeah.
So I think the submersible incident, the submersible event in the Baltic Sea was definitely amusing as a juxtaposition with the Moscow protests. So I wouldn't be surprised if he weighs in some form or another in the next day or so.
Yeah, I agree. I would guess probably more likely to be Peskov at this point. But yeah, I think you're right. Before the weekend, we'll see something. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Mike, thanks very much. I'll be back next Monday to take a look again at the week ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please have a look at my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which comes out on Fridays. Thanks for listening.